Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to Mexico City for a reaction to a report by Human Rights Watch that over 20,000 Mexicans have disappeared, many at the hands of the military, during the last 6 years, in addition to the 70,000 who have died in the drug wars. Joining us to discuss the grim legacy of President Calderon is Joan Grillo, who covers the drug wars in Mexico for Time, CNN, and the PBS NewsHour, and is the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Then, with 15 Republican senators writing to the president today asking him to withdraw the Hagel nomination, we will speak with former Assistant Secretary of Defense Lawrence Korb about his article at Foreign Policy, Hagel's Revenge, How Obama's New Pentagon Chief Can Get Back at His Republican Enemies. We will discuss the all but certain confirmation of the new Secretary of Defense and how, if he chooses to, Secretary Hagel could move bases and defense contracts from South Carolina and Texas to punish Senators Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz for their unwarranted and disgraceful attacks on his integrity and character. Then finally, we will examine why the global markets went down today, falling after some members of the Fed expressed concerns in just-released minutes of the board's January meeting about continuing to buy $85 billion of bonds each month. Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, joins us to discuss the consequences of the impending sequester cuts on top of money already taken out of a weak economy by the fiscal cliff deal that are certain to slow growth and economic recovery. And joining us now from Mexico City is Joan Grillo, who has covered Latin America since 2001 for the international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, the Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, the Houston Chronicle, CBC, the Sunday Telegraph, and Reuters. He has covered the drug war in Mexico and has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joan Grillo.
Hey, it's good to be here.
And what's the reaction in Mexico now from the release of the new report by Human Rights Watch that indicates that over 20,000 people have disappeared in Mexico during the 6 years of the outgoing president Calderon? The same period, of course, an estimated 70,000 people have been killed. But in addition to that 70,000 killed, 20,000 plus are missing.
Well, it's interesting timing for the report because it's come out, obviously, releasing more shocking numbers about the devastation that's happened during the drug war the last 6 years. But it's come out now as a new president has taken power since December. So it really talks about things that happened under the previous administration. Now, what it highlights particularly is 149 specific cases they looked at of disappearances where they say it is likely that the state forces were involved, either soldiers or police were involved in a disappearance. That's cases when you have somebody, for example, who was arrested by soldiers, taken away, and then last seen in the hands of soldiers, and then never seen again, and the soldiers were also, you know, kind of denied anything to do with it. Now, people have, you know, human rights workers here have been documenting this case for some time, but it's you know, it's powerful to have an international NGO with the name of Human Rights Watch come out with those kind of figures, and I think puts, you know, more pressure on this government to help resolve some of those cases, find some of those disappeared, bring criminal charges possibly against members of the military or police involved in those disappearances.
Well, my understanding is that the U.S., I don't know whether they were concerned about the new president being with the PRI party, the notorious party that was ruling Mexico for longer than the Communist Party of the Soviet Union ruled the Soviet Union. And there was I may have even spoken to you about this, the disquiet about the PRI coming back since they had obviously had such a cozy relationship with the drug cartels. And of course, this is the new PRI. My understanding is that the U.S. did weigh in and veto somebody that was being nominated to be the head of the Mexican military. Is that correct?
That was a story which was exposed by the New York Times based on some sources they had inside U.S. agencies. But the Mexican and U.S. government have denied that happened. So, you know, we have to try and make our own minds up if that happened or not. But the official line was, we're not concerned about from that point of view, that was the official line that the U.S. agencies always said, you know, the Pri's come back to power, we're happy to work with them. Privately, when you talk to some drug enforcement agents, they say, well, yeah, you know, maybe the Pri will be more tempted to make deals with cartels and so forth. But I think, as we know, there's a lot of very mixed feelings inside the U.S. administration about what's best for Mexico. I don't think many people in the U.S. like the level of violence that Mexico has suffered in the last 6 years. And this has been under a Pan administration. So they do think, well, perhaps something else does need to be done. But, you know, in terms of the Pri coming back with this, I mean, I think these disappearances, I mean, this is stuff which has happened under the Pan government, under the Pan president. So I think when you talk about these abuses committed by the military, forced disappearances committed by the military, this is very much on the Pan rather than on the Pri.
Perhaps you implied earlier, Johan Grillo, that it may not be a coincidence that this report's coming out now that there's a new president, Peña Nieto, and this report, of course, is critical of the prior regime of Calderón. But Human Rights Watch, of course, is an independent organization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to comment too much on their timing. I understand, looking at the report, that they began investigating a year ago. So it was a long investigation. They wanted to document various cases, so it takes time. I don't know if they were thinking in terms of the change of administration, if that affected their choice of when they brought this out. The Human Rights Watch has had previous reports that were done during the administration of Felipe Calderón condemning military abuses. So they have done things. They're just saying, you know, then really it has a different implication right now, because if it was coming out right under Calderón, it would be a direct responsibility of that government. It would be showing abuse committed under that government, whereas this, you know, is a new administration, so they can say, well, okay, this looks very bad, but, you know, we're a new government in power, and things aren't going to be that way anymore.
So my understanding is that what the officials are more or less saying, you know, unofficially, shall we say, is that, well, maybe 20 to 25,000 people have been disappeared, but most of them are real bad guys. But that's not necessarily the case, is it? What Human Rights Watch has found is that a lot of these victims are innocent victims, like a group of men, eight young men who disappeared on a hunting trip in Zacatecas. They were apparently captured by Los Zetas, who are an extremely dangerous group of former policemen and security people who are totally psychotic. There was another group of young men as well, who apparently one of whom got into an argument in a bar, and the bar owner had friends in the police, so the police arrested him and then turned them over, either killed them or turned them over to a bunch of drug thugs that they were working with to have them killed. So I guess there's nothing new about the relationship between organized crime and corrupt police in Mexico.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very important point that you make, and it's always very hard to decipher this horrific circle of violence from outside of Mexico and what's going on. But yeah, it's a very important point that in the early days of this drug war, Felipe Calderón was insisting that, you know, the vast majority of people who were dying or disappeared and so forth were gangsters, were drug cartel members. And there was the old kind of wisdom, you know, on Mexico streets, that if you weren't involved in this, you didn't have to worry too much. You know, if you weren't trafficking drugs or a policeman or something, you didn't have to worry too much. But as you say, many victims have been innocent people who have been caught up for a whole variety of reasons, from simply going to a bar and getting an argument with somebody, to being a witness, just to being in the street in the wrong time, in the wrong place. And that's something which has been emphasized a lot by people like the poet Javier Cecilia, whose own son was an innocent victim who was killed, and who's led a movement called the Movement of Victims for Justice with Peace and Dignity. And he is searching and often brings forward the stories of victims and bring that into public consciousness.
Again, I'm speaking with Joan Grillo, who is in Mexico City. He's covered Latin America since 2001 for the international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, the Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, the Houston Chronicle, CBC, the Sunday Telegraph, and Reuters. He's covered the drug war in Mexico and has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Now, in addition to the 20,000-plus people who've disappeared, according to this new report by Human Rights Watch in Mexico, that's in addition to the 70,000 who've been killed in the 6 years of the previous President Calderon, there is also a rash of kidnapping going on, isn't it, associated with the drug cartels. They've diversified, have they not, into other criminal activities?
That is correct, and that's been another real problem for Mexican society. When you have these armed groups of gunmen who make their money trafficking drugs to the United States, they're in a very powerful position to make even more money extorting the community and kidnapping people. And there's been a real rise in kidnappings in Mexico over the last 5 years. And very, very sad cases, particularly in areas where cartels are very strong, places in the northeast of Mexico, like Tamaulipas over the border from Texas, in places like Veracruz, in places like Zacatecas, in places like Acapulco, which have seen a lot of violence recently. So again, another real problem for society, and our reason is no longer a question of just saying, these are bad guys, the drug traffickers, they're sending drugs to Americans, and if we're not involved and we don't have to worry about it. These people are a real problem for innocent people in this country, Mexico as well.
Well, of course, the guns, which are, military-style weapons that these cartels have in Mexico, most of them, I think, come from the United States. They're bought at gun stores just across the border, and the ATF, because of the NRA here in the United States, has been totally hobbled from recording these gun sales and interdicting them. So
that's a good point. The guns here, many assault rifles, and that's the main weapon of choice of drug cartels, are the assault rifles, the AR-15s and the AK-47s, the Kalashnikovs, which are sold in U.S. stores. Now, these were prohibited under the assault rifle ban back between 1994 and 2004. If you look, actually, the cartel-related violence in Mexico first began to shoot up in 2004, so the very same year that the assault rifle ban was lifted in the United States was when cartel violence increased here. And you can see a clear relationship there. They're buying, it's a lot easier to buy AK-47s and AR-15s, bring them down here, and that set off a lot of the chain of violence. They do also get guns from other places. They also get some of the RPG-7s. They have the rocket-propelled grenades, and they get some of those from Central American military stashes, and they get fragmentation grenades and so forth. But the assault rifles are a big problem, and many politicians in Mexico and people in Mexico are in favor of a new assault rifle ban in the United States. They're very hopeful that this discussion that's happening in the U.S. Congress could lead to some action there, which would ease the situation here.
Well, it's pretty amazing here, working here in the United States, Joan Grillo, as a reporter, trying to figure out how it could be that the NRA, whose mantra is that they protect the legal rights of honest citizens to own guns, when in fact their record is pretty clear that they protect the rights of criminals and psychotic criminal thugs in Mexico to own machine guns. I mean, it's pretty surreal. The police chief in Nuevo Laredo, right on the border there with Texas, has disappeared. It's amazing anybody took that job in the first place. I mean, his predecessors have been murdered and disappeared.
Yes, and again, a problem going back for some years. I was in Nuevo Laredo back in 2005 and interviewed the guy who was about to become the police chief back in 2005. He was the head of the Chamber of Commerce in the city. and they've been in his office. 2 weeks later, he was appointed police chief, and when he first took the job, they said to him in a press conference, are you scared? Are you not scared? He said, I'm not scared. The people who are scared are the corrupt ones. And he was shot dead 7 hours after making that statement. 7 hours after signing and taking the oath of office, then he was shot dead. So that very sad. And then back in 2005 and continue to this day, that a very difficult job to be police chief in these areas, and a real threat to the basic rule of law, the basic operating of a state. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, what this violence in Mexico means, and some would say it was simply a problem of criminals or of gangs. You know, what I argue is a lot more than that. You know, this is a form of violence which really threatens the basic functions of government in this country.
Well, when you have this, apparently, the gangs and the police who work with the gangs operate on this idea of the choice is between plomo y plata, lead or silver. Silver's a bribe, lead's a bullet. That's the choice that you know, people who are about to be corrupted are faced with. And it's little wonder that so many police are corrupt, if that's the choice. I mean, in other words, look at the current chief of police of Nuevo Laredo. Given the history of the people in that, his predecessors, now he's disappeared. You know, you can understand why these low-paid cops are corrupt, surely.
Yeah, that's a major problem, and I think you have to look at the more fundamental problem of the $30 billion or so of drug money that comes every year from the United States into Mexico, selling of cocaine, marijuana, crystal meth, and heroin, and how you can stop that money coming. If you want to look at any long-term solution to this, there's got to be a way of reducing substantially those funds. I think it was very exciting to see what happened in Seattle, in Washington State, and in Colorado on November the 6th when voters chose to legalize marijuana there, and had that setting off perhaps a snowball effect. We'll see what happens in California with that, you know, and other states that could be the next ones to legalize marijuana. And if there's a big change in the whole policy of drug prohibition, this might be part of the solution in the long term to the violence in Mexico.
Well, as it stands, the American drug consumer is funding this mayhem in Mexico. And if you could find honest police and recruit them and have trained professional police and pay them a decent wage, you wouldn't have this problem. But is this new president, does he have the resources? In other words, here we are wasting billions and billions every year on this failed war on drugs. Why not spend some of that money on creating professional police forces in Mexico so that you don't end up with these criminal gangs like Los Zetas and all of these other cops? There's nothing scarier, Joanne, than the idea that the police who are supposed to protect you are criminals.
Yeah, it's very frightening and unfortunately a very deep set problem here in Mexico. There is a plan of this new president, Enrique Peña Nieto, an 8-point security plan, which he's got the backing of the three major parties for. And that does include pushing through the legal reform to try and make a kind of open system with jurors in Mexico. And also more coordination among the police and cleaning out the police and so forth. They're very hard challenges. It does take, you know, it will take a long time to do this. It's not something that can happen overnight. Basically, you've had in Mexico for hundreds of years a justice system, which is not based like in the United States or in England on juries and on kind of evidence and so forth. It's more keeping order through a system of power, really, is how it's functioned fundamentally, where you have when somebody's really upsetting the balance, they can give them. But it's basically a very difficult uphill challenge to create a decent legal system in Mexico, which will take time. And that is, again, another crucial element to trying to make some kind of peace in this country.
Well, just in closing, Joan Grillo, I mean, obviously, there's a responsibility on part of the American drug consumer to recognize the mayhem that the money that they spend on drugs is ending up causing 70,000 deaths and 20,000 disappearances in Mexico just in the last 6 years. Obviously, I think drug users probably don't have a, you know, they're sufficiently impaired not to care, I suppose. That's one way of looking at it. But I often feel that the U.S. is getting it both ways. You know, they huff and puff about how Mexico is corrupt. At the same time, they're the ones that are corrupting the place.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's long overdue to have this big debate about drug consumption. Interesting, the idea about drug consumers, drug users being conscious about, you know, where that money goes. I think it's very difficult. I think it'd be very, very difficult to persuade people not to take drugs because drug money finances criminals. I think that, you know, very difficult. I think it's probably more realistic to look at the drug policy reform in terms of how do you regulate drugs, how do you put drug money into the economy rather than just bankrolling the, you know, criminal cartels and assassins and so forth. So I think the drug policy reform movement is very interesting in the United States right now, you know, and all of that move to legalize marijuana, first of all, and then to look at other drugs and what can be done to, you know, to have real drug rehabilitation programs, you know, or other programs like methadone or so forth, which reduce people from buying the illegal drugs and allow them to function. So I think a kind of whole rethinking of drug policy needs to be done, and I hope this is the historical time that it's going to happen.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here from Mexico City, Joan Grillo.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Joan Grillo, who's covered Latin America since 2001 for international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, The Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, The Houston Chronicle, CBC, and The Sunday Telegraph, and Reuters. He's covered the drug war in Mexico and has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the United States ambassador. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how Chuck Hagel can get his revenge on his Republican enemies.